Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Shanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and we've had some great ones already today. Our thanks to Christian Winfield, the New York Daily News, covering the Brooklyn Nets, as I learned. I said New York Nets apparently earlier in the show. Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News, he reports on the New York Nets. No idea what my brain decided to do there, but that's why I need help sometimes. Peter Burns, our great SEC Network host, co-host of Best Week Ever on ESPN Radio, stopped by, as did ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes. PJ Carlesmar, ESPN NBA analyst, is going to stop by in about 10 minutes here. Mike Golic Jr. riding solo today. Chinne Agwumike off the LA Sparks call, and she's got responsibilities there. We support. We're looking forward to watching her continue to ball out. And we'll get into a lot with PJ for the games coming up tonight in the NBA, because last night gave us a lot of fireworks, man. Donovan Mitchell has shown he is worth the price of admission. He probably deserved that a long time ago, but we know we're slow to these things with the teams out there. And I guess the Southwest, Utah, Arizona, Colorado kind of area, I feel like we treat those teams all the same in the NBA, and they've got to overcome a lot of inertia. No such issues for the 76ers or Trae Young. Been box office for a while now. The Suns in the nightcap in this one against the Nuggets. That prime example, though, of a team that is red hot. Red hot now in the Phoenix Suns. Chris Paul getting healthy at the right time. And lo and behold, the teams that were good basketball teams all year long have been out here balling in the postseason, but because they have logos that we're not used to, we know. It's a bit of a difficult process. So excited to talk to PJ about the matchup coming up tonight right now. Is there anything the Hawks can do to stop Joel Embiid at this point? Because back-to-back almost 40-point outings in these games on a meniscus that's got a slight tear in and has been insane to watch right now. And if he continues to do that, the 76ers are going to continue to get enough from their role players, because when you've got that foundation, I've said the stars are the ones who set the tone. The teams take on the image of their stars in this postseason. You got the 76ers playing up to the level of Joel Embiid from the fourth quarter of game one all through game two, and you had the Milwaukee Bucks last night playing like PJ Tucker in that game, in one of the ugliest basketball games that we will ever see. But all of this talk, a lot of the names I just mentioned, stars that we've seen, we've talked so much about the growth of Trae Young, the showman, during this NBA postseason. I just mentioned Donovan Mitchell, who has been an absolute rocket since missing game one of their opening round series in a game that he contested, game that he said his camp, I'm ready, I'm clear to go. Utah did not agree. We saw that there was some friction there, and ever since then, it's like he's taken it out on the rim because he has been absolutely torching this thing. We've seen guys like him and Luka Doncic owning a postseason where LeBron James had a first-round exit. And so I know a lot of this is going to be cloaked in recency bias, but I saw on Twitter earlier today our ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky put up a poll. Now, I understand Dan Orlovsky is an NFL analyst, and his timeline is probably going to largely skew NFL. And so I don't take this result as gospel, but I ask the question. At Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, which league, the NFL or the NBA, has more young superstars, has better young superstars, the NFL or the NBA? His poll ended up with the NFL winning 53.9% to 46.1%. And so we looked down and we started kind of making a list, because when we think young, we usually do the under 25 lists around these different leagues here. And again, it's going to be hard to overcome, even in my mind right now, as big as a football fan as I am, we're drowning in the NBA playoffs right now. We're watching all these guys go out here and do and accomplish and hold our attention in this way right now. And so when you list down the NBA names in a sport that is inherently more visual, where there are no helmets, so you get to see these guys in a way that you don't, it's hard to look away from this league when you throw, again, like in the under 25 camp, Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons, Luka Doncic, Jason Tatum, Trae Young, Zion Williamson, who's not in the postseason, but we know is box office. So many of these guys, especially in the basketball world now, come with such a cult following. Zion's kind of that example of what's coming next. Guys that we've gotten to know, that young people have gotten to know through social media in a way that didn't necessarily happen for everyone south of LeBron before that, where you get these big buildups for high school kids. And so the NBA is a tough contender to deal with, because on the NFL side, what we've got, and I think the difference in this league is, with so many of the names I just mentioned, there aren't a lot of like accolades in that group, right? We don't have a lot of MVPs yet. We don't have a lot of those guys with NBA championships yet, because we've seen it dominated by the Lakers. We've seen it dominated by veterans like Kawhi Leonard, dynasties like the Golden State Warriors in the NBA. The NFL, we know there's a little more room for parity. And so when you mention some of these names, you can get a little more accomplishment early on, right? Like, we can mention Lamar Jackson in this conversation. We can mention him and Patrick Mahomes would probably be the first two names out of your mouth. And so you've got two MVP awards there and a Super Bowl win for the Kansas City Chiefs. And both of those guys, again, because Lamar Jackson was also a Heisman Trophy winner in college, we got to know him in a different way. He's a guy we've been able to take the helmet off of a fair amount, as has Patrick Mahomes is overwhelmingly the face of the NFL now. And so those guys already, you could prorate there. And I hear everyone when they say with the NFL, well, you've got 53 guys on a roster versus what, 15 with the NBA? So numbers-wise, yeah, you're going to have a higher volume here. But I think you've got a lot to overcome in the NFL in a sport where there are as many bodies on the field, where we do have helmeted players, where the general tendency is to make it more about the team, the coach, all these things. But you can keep going on down the list. Kyler Murray, I think, is considered in that way. I don't know if he's quite a superstar NFL-wise, but for a guy who was the number one pick in two sports who ended up choosing football, that felt like kind of a big deal. He feels like kind of a big deal. Christian McCaffrey's a name that's on that list under 25. Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. Like, this is going to be largely dominated by quarterbacks. But again, Joe Burrow is someone who had, I think, an uncommonly vocal season for a college quarterback in 2019 for LSU, right? We don't normally get to hear from college players in that way. And so I feel like he announced himself on that way. Trevor Lawrence in the same way. Like, we're getting those guys jumping to the party earlier on. So you can make an argument for the NFL. But man, oh man, I got to tell you, and it won't sound as sexy, because I think if you actually made me choose, for my money, who has better young superstars in their league, if I ignore the recency bias, and I think if we judge better as not only by the following you have, the amount of press you get, how many different places we see your face, but also accomplishment and what you've done so far, it feels like the NFL might win that one. Because again, I think that's a league where it's a lot more likely to see young players go out and accomplish, whether it's winning MVPs or winning championships earlier in their career, than it is otherwise. But I think there's one league we probably need to give a little bit more credit to, and that's Major League Baseball. Because very quietly, what we have seen right now, we've talked about it a lot on this show, is the churn of young players in Major League Baseball kind of making the sport look, feel more fun, younger. Juan Soto, Ronald Acuna Jr., Vladdy Jr., Fernando Tatis, Shohei Ohtani, who we talk about all the time. You talk about knowing what you're going to get when you buy a ticket for the price of admission. Shohei Ohtani might be that dude in all of sports right now, mashing colossal dingers at every turn. ERA under 3, like all these different things that we can point back to with him. And you look at Major League Baseball and the fact that we can even say they're in this conversation, that I think, again, the NFL ultimately probably wins because of the nature of the sport in certain ways for young guys. The fact that Major League Baseball can even have a competent seat at the table based on how we usually characterize that sport, I think, despite all the stuff that we've seen, certainly bad relationship between labor and management right now, all the sticky stuff going on, Garrett Cole forgetting words when asked a simple question about all that, I think that's a huge boom for the health of the sport right now. Like, it's not just, yeah, we got the pot, like our Padres with the 6-pound gold chain that Fernando Tatis gets to put on. It's the fact that all these guys are performing. Like, I didn't even get to mention Mookie Betts, who put out such a Captain Insano highlight in their game against the Pirates the other day. You see him just spinning, hurl a ball on a rope to home plate, and he plays in Los Angeles. That's the other part of this that we could have a conversation about if we wanted to, is the star location. As much as you think, yeah, we can have stars. Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, it's not a huge market. Lamar Jackson's in Baltimore, not a massive market. But again, the NFL is such a national league, baseball a bit more of a regional sport, and so having a guy like that in Los Angeles and Mookie Betts, Fernando Tatis Jr. is on the West Coast. We know the Padres, it's not exactly Los Angeles when we talk about it that way. But again, the fact that they've even got a seat at the table, I think, is a huge step forward. This part of our MLB weekend preview is brought to you by Credit Karma. Visit creditkarma.com/winmoney. to open your free account and start using Instant Karma. Credit Karma money, progress starts here. At Mike Golic Jr., which league? I'll even throw Major League Baseball. I've seen people cape for the NHL in this conversation. Which league has the best young superstars? At Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter. We'll hit some of those, but we'll also try and figure out how the Atlanta Hawks can go about stopping Joel Embiid. Next on ESPN Radio.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Goods, the bads, and the what if for college football playoffs proposed expansion. We'll get to that in about 10 minutes here on Jhené and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. flying solo today. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests like PJ Carlesimo, our ESPN Radio NBA analyst, joins us in studio, giving us a straight talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. And PJ, the last time we talked to you, we spent a lot of time talking about fish skins and fried fish skins. So I apologize for not having the spread laid out for you here.
Yeah, I thought Jhené would have had something ready, but I didn't realize, we were on our own tonight. So it's No fish skins. We'll take a rain check.
Exactly. Like I say, that'll be Jhené comes back, as usual, makes everything better with things like fish skins and that. So in the meantime, PJ, we get to take a look at some NBA action. Going to be on the call for the Sixers and Hawks coming up. Coverage starts at 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio right after us here. Going back even to the fourth quarter of Game 1, this 76ers team looked like a different outfit from there on through Game 2. What did you see from Doc Rivers and this team that started to click and give them a chance to even the series the way they did?
Well, they got back to defend in the way that they customarily defend. In that, fourth quarter of Game 1, they were just down so much, they just, threw everything at them. They started pressing, turned them over, and really looked like they were going to win the game. Bogdanović hit that huge three that I think it was going to be one of those unfortunate nights if you're an Atlanta fan where you outplayed a team for most of the game and you lose. And it's amazing, too. I didn't realize till looking, I was looking at the master sheet today. Today's the 10th game of the second round, 10th game that's been played. That's the only time a road team has won. The home team's won 9 times, or wow. eight out of the 9 games. So it's going to be interesting to see. And I didn't realize also Atlanta's on a 13-game winning streak at home. So they got a couple of things going tonight if you like home teams. Philadelphia defended better. They came out with great intensity in Game 2. And then Atlanta worked their way back into it. And Embiid is playing so well. When Sean Kelly and I talked to Doc Rivers this morning, the first thing I asked him was, how confident are you? He said, great, as long as he's healthy, but it's just, you just don't know. And injuries has been such a big story, Mike. Almost every series has been impacted already. And obviously, if Joel Embiid, pulls up lame or has to miss a half or come out for a little while, that's a different Philadelphia team.
There's no doubt, and you're right, attrition seems to be the number one factor. It usually is in most seasons, but I think we know the short turnaround coming off the bubble season, it's clearly had an effect on a lot of teams. But Joel Embiid comes into this series with a slight tear in that meniscus that we all knew about. How do we make sense of him still going for 40 points a night here? Because it hasn't looked like it slowed him down at all.
I said that to Doc. I said, Doc, he's got we didn't think he was going to play, and he's got 79 points in 2 games. And he said, I'll tell you, if you watch him, he's worked very hard at what the things he can do. And he's been in at practice and stayed extra. And he said he literally is doing things he's capable of doing. He's trying to, tune his body into saying you can't do this, you can't do that, and play within himself. And so far it's worked. But, he's had a great year. He's actually had a great career. But you hate to say it, Mike, if you look, all the games he's missed over over time, you can't, with all the injuries that are happening, I certainly hope it doesn't occur. But, boy, you got to be every morning, I think you start with a prayer and say, I hope we have Joel for the whole game.
Exactly. And it works, because it usually works out, like you said, so, so well when it does. And we're all better for it as an NBA public. As PJ Carlesimo, our ESPN NBA analyst, is with us here on Jhené and Golic Jr. On the other side, you mentioned the 76ers started defending better at the end of that Game 1 here. What do the Hawks do now to try and stymie a guy like Joel Embiid, who's pretty much had whatever he's wanted?
Yeah, they haven't had a lot of success. When we were talking to Nate McMillan today, he said they have to do a better job. The coach is cliche, but it's true, before he gets the ball. They got to deny him a little bit, maybe front him occasionally. They got to get him away from the basket. If you wrestle with him, if you push with him, be it Clint Capella or whoever is in there with him, maybe get him 3. It doesn't sound like a lot, but instead of catching the ball deep and right on the box where all he's got to do is turn, push him 3 feet up higher, out wider, so the catch isn't as simple as it's been, because he's just had his way. And Nate said they're going to have to come with some double teams. There's no question. If he does catch it deep, they got to come with a quick double team and just try and get the ball out of his hands and make other people beat you, because there's no question, Joel, what he's going to do if he gets it. And compounding it, unlike a lot of people, seems to be playing in the playoffs, he makes his free throws. He shoots like in the mid to high 80s. So following him is not an option. So he's really a handful for any team trying to defend him.
Yeah, there's no Haka Embiid strategy that's going to go on here anytime
soon. It does not work.
So on the other side, Trae Young has been someone who they threw a lot in game one. And we saw clearly the directive in game two was, we're going to try and make the head of the snake uncomfortable and see if the body can beat us here. So as you talk to Nate McMillan and the staff here, does the plan change at all with ways they try and get Trae Young involved in this offensively?
No, not really, because he said it's a learning process, and what Trey's going through is what all the great players, what are you going to do when they throw a box and one at you? What are they going to do when you, what are you going to do when they double team you at half court, or anytime it's a pick and roll, they jump you? He has seen a lot already, but the playoffs are a different animal. Teams are so tuned in the playoffs. I mean, it reminds me of like getting ready for an NCAA game or a college preparation. You have a couple days to get ready for the same team, and it's not like what happens during the regular season. Sometimes you're on a back-to-back. You get in at 3 in the morning. You're lucky if you have a walkthrough. Everybody knows every call now. They know every play. So it really comes down to individual execution. And what bothered him a little bit in game two was the length they threw at him. Ben Simmons is as big and good a defender on the wing as there is, but also Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle, those are big, long guys, and they pressured his shots. He didn't shoot the three as well. He's got to get away from that length. If they come with the length, he's got to get by them on the dribble a little bit, and then he's also got to, you know, let his teammates get involved. I'll tell you, last game, I'm super impressed with Kevin Huerter. He's played so well. Danilo Gallinari played real well off the bench, and Bogdanović has been extremely since April 1st, he's been one of the best three-point shooters in the league. So Trey's got to trust his teammates. If they come with a double team, or if the length is bothering him, they got some weapons who can score, and they've really done well. 13 in a row at any point in the NBA season is impressive at this time of the year. That's an amazing streak.
I can say State Farm Arena has become an absolute hornet's nest to go and try and play in right now. And that is the cool part of all this, because we're finally seeing bodies back in these arenas that make it that way.
You know, Doc talked about it today, and of course Doc played for 8 years in Atlanta, and it's a great quote. We're going to play it at some time during the game. And he said, hey, this is different now. They come, it's playoff time. It's a different arena in Atlanta than you used to going in there and it not being too many people and it not being very loud. You saw it in those two playoff games when they beat the Knicks in games 3 and 4. It's jumping now, and it's a great atmosphere. This team has done it. The team has put the fans back in the stands, so it's a good marriage, and things are happening in Atlanta.
It's a huge testament to the job this team has done. Nate McMillan, what he's done since coming over here midway through the season. And that's the game you guys are tuning into tonight. The NBA playoffs are on ESPN Radio. Game 3, Hawks hosting the 76ers, presented by Indeed. Coverage is going to start at 7 p.m. Eastern right here on most ESPN Radio stations. And when you tune over there, you are going to hear P.J. Carlissimo on the call. P.J., always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Have a great game.
Michael, thank you. Great to be with you.
I'm going to say, Fishkins next time. I promise we're going to make it happen.
All right. We'll see.
Coming up next, though, the College Football Playoffs Working Committee looks like they're going to try and make expansion and happen. Who wins, who loses, and what's the biggest question mark left out there? Next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golden Jr., the podcast.
I hope and pray with everything in my body that I have the time, nay, the courage, to read you the most outlandish headline I have seen in a while. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Guest join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. with you guys today. I have found the story and the next guest that needs to be on Marty and McGee. One of the greatest weekend radio shows, one of the greatest shows, period, here at ESPN. And I have found their next guest. A man who has been in a situation that none of us should ever hope to find ourselves and managed to survive something I never could have dreamed of. So we'll get to that in about 10 minutes here on ESPN Radio. But yesterday we spent a lot of time with and revisited a day with Peter Burns, our SEC network host, who was kind enough to join us. The idea of college football playoff expansion that really got dropped in all of our laps yesterday. There was a working group of three conference commissioners and Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick that met, tried to deliberate some of the proposals that had been on the table for expansion. And the one they recommended, again, we got a long way to go before we get there, but recommended out loud in front of people, a 12-team playoff, expansion to 12 teams, six bids right now for the top six ranked conference champions, and six at-large bids to make 12 teams in the new playoff here. A lot of things that come with this, a lot of permutations about this. And the fine folks at ESPN.com, some of our great college football writers, Harry Lyles, a great group of guys in there, men and women, put together a list with some questions in all this. Questions around the world of college football, of what comes from this next. And I think it's fascinating to look at a few of these here. What the best part of a proposed 12-team playoff is going to be. Because I've heard, and again, I had to put up my bad guy label yesterday. I had to come in here, be the Notre Dame guy, yell out independent and everybody who thinks this is going to be a reason for them to join a conference. But when we talk about the best thing to come out of this, I think the overwhelming best part of this proposal is it's going to end a lot of the what-if discussion about the group of five, right? Like, that is a group of teams that I am thrilled for because, again, I got to call a lot of games on Thursday nights this past year with Matt Barry, covering the MAC, covering Conference USA, trying to get a look at more teams that we normally wouldn't. Because remember, we had the Pac-12 and the Big Ten both starting later than usual, which meant we got more of these group of five conferences, the American Athletic Conference, that for so long campaigned for the Power Six, on TV in places where people normally hadn't seen them before necessarily, and all of a sudden got the exposure and realized, hey, man, listen, Coastal Carolina is playing damn good football down there. Jamie Chadwell's got those boys working. Luke Fickell and what they've got going on, it's not an accident at Cincinnati. It stopped, like, that team's been good for a while, so now they're going to get a chance, like we see in these bowl games all the time, like it used to happen in the old BCS. You're going to get these teams that show and I think get more people on board for respecting this. That, to me, is the best part about the proposed CFP, is it's going to get more people to like more of the parts of college football, is probably the best way, because I think we get a little too narrow focus. It's way too championship or bust. Do I think the group of five teams are going to win the Natty? No. Not at all. I don't even think it'll be close when you play the Alabamas and Clemsons of the world. But do I think it's good that more people will be paying attention to those teams? Hell yeah. What part are you most skeptical of this? I mean, I'm most skeptical of the notion that we're going to add more games onto the schedule for players that aren't already being paid, right? Like, you're going to say, yeah, you're going to host home games in the first round, which I think is, from a fan's perspective, objectively awesome. The idea of playing late season games, hosting some of these big time bowl like matchups on a home field. The part that's going to stink, and I said this yesterday, we can romanticize cold weather games. We see it in the NFL. Those guys are highly paid professionals. College sports needs help to make sure the quality looks good. And a cold weather game in Madison, Wisconsin, in South Bend, Indiana, in Minnesota, those are going to be difficult. Like, players, I mean, that's why we look forward to bowl season. I didn't want to play in South Bend in December. I know we got a good chance of beating a team from the South that's going to come up and try and play in that in December. That doesn't mean I have to like it anymore. So I'm most skeptical of adding more onto the plate, because I know everyone says the FCS does it. I know everyone says that college basketball does it. This is a different level of box office and physicality across the board that we all know and acknowledge, and the risks that come with that are still such, and the gains financially that are going to come with this are still such that I look at this and say, all right, you're going to continue to add more, you better give more. Thankfully, NIL, the one-time transfer rules, are at least providing some freedom of movement, but I'm still skeptical of continuing to build up this machine around the unpaid labor in the middle. The favorite what-if about a 12-team playoff since the college football's inception. Favorite what-if about a 12-team playoff. Well, my favorite what-if about this now is what it's going to look like for the CFP and what it's going to potentially look like. I know I make this selfish for Notre Dame. If you get a Notre Dame team, and just walk with me. I can hear the people already saying, well, they're not even as good as X, Y, or Z team. Just walk me through this. Huge recruiting boom in South Bend. Brian Kelly in this program. Ascend past where they've been. And you get a Notre Dame team that, again, right now, the six highest-ranked conference champions are the teams eligible for first-round buys, are eligible for those top six seeds. Notre Dame is not. And so you could have an undefeated 12-0 Notre Dame team that's boat racing teams winning by 30 points a game against the hardest schedule in the country. Beat a gauntlet. They went out of conference and played Georgia, Southern Cal, Clemson, Ohio State, and beat them all. Beat the brakes off of them. You could have that team ranked at best 7th in this and not getting a first round bye. How does that look for you if you're supposed to be picking the best teams if you're the College Football Playoff Committee? And would it ever force Notre Dame to ask some uncomfortable questions about its status as an independent? That, I think, is one of the biggest what-ifs that's going to hang in the balance. That was the focus of so many people's ire yesterday as we talked about this. The last one, who's the biggest winner in the proposal? And again, I think this goes hand-in-hand with the best. What's the best thing about this? Is the biggest winner, if it's the best part, us paying more attention to teams outside of our normal scope and purview, it's 100% the Group of Five. These people that have been living on the ancillary of the college football conversation so long. But yeah, the diehards like all of us who are just going to live and breathe whatever comes out on Saturday, Thursday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all buy into. But I'm excited for more people to get to know them, to have to know them, for the conversations that have become so integral. As college football's gone national with this idea of the CFP, kind of in the way it did with the BCS. We've kind of bacon-wrapped the same BCS structure with a different name, with a different end, but I think ultimately similar outcomes, similar structure in a lot of ways. Now you're going to have to get to know some of these teams again. Because, spoiler alert, the Group of Five's been good. Like, I know the names change, and Cincinnati and Coastal Carolina occupied the spot that had previously been held by UCF for so long, but those names are going to continue to rotate through, and I think that group overwhelmingly the big winners, because last year we would have had two Group of Five teams in the college football playoff, and that's not out of the realm in the future. Got so much change on the horizon. It can feel overwhelming at times. But coming up next, I promise you we will deliver on the most overwhelming scenario one man found himself in, managing to escape certain death, next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae Angola Jr., the podcast.
Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. So many people to thank on a too damn Friday here for helping us out. Janae Agumake is off conquering the world, which means Christine Williamson was kind enough to hold it down with us in the first hour of the show. You can catch her over on Hoopstream, 7 o'clock Eastern, wherever you consume ESPN digital content, as well as on ESPN Radio later tonight, SportsCenter all night here. Huge rock star. She is one of many. Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News, Brooklyn Nets reporter for that team, stopped by and made sure I called them the Brooklyn Nets and not the New York Nets. Like an idiot. Peter Burns, our ESPN SEC Network host. Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News. He reports on the New York Nets. Never miss a chance to make me look dumb. PB stopped by, joined us talking about the college football playoff potential expansion. Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst and noted Bruce Brown defender of the Brooklyn Nets, let us know why that shot was perfectly fine. And PJ Carlissimo, who you're going to hear after us on ESPN Radio, on the call for 76ers and Hawks. Coming up, coverage begins on most ESPN radio stations starting at 7 p.m. Eastern. But we're feeling good. We're going to try and take you into the week on a positive note, and I promise give you the weirdest story I've ever heard. Let's keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae Angola Jr.
But before we do that, we got to give some kudos to Jordan Clarkson of the Utah Jazz. Jordan Clarkson, who is a Filipino-American, saw the hateful racial slur spray-painted all over a well-known Filipino food truck in Utah on social media and was overcome. He went out and decided that he had to act. He had a strong reaction. It was on the side of the world-famous Yum Yum food truck, and the sixth man of the year in the NBA decided that he was going to make sure that these people were well taken care of. Take a listen to Jordan Clarkson talking in their press conference about why he felt so compelled to act here.
Well, my first reaction was this is bullshit. I was just like, we can't be f***ing doing this. It's just no room for that, especially right now. It's, you know, it's been tough years on this earth, this country, this world. It's a lot of stuff going on. I feel like us together and everybody, you know, finding a peace will make things a lot more, comforting in this world. And we ain't got no room for the hate no more, so... That's got to go out the window real quick.
And it wasn't just words from Jordan Clarkson. The Jazz invited the food truck's co-owner, Ben Pierce, and his family to Game 2. Jordan Clarkson also offered the food truck owners significant financial support to help get the truck up and running again. And I heard more in a larger quote. He said it reminded him of seeing the way his father worked so hard growing up to provide for their family. So big shout out to Jordan Clarkson making good and helping a bad situation here. Big shout out to our coworker as well. Sarah Spain's got an article up on ESPN.com. Right now that if you haven't read, you need to. The sports world needs to prevent, not just respond to sexual harassment. Sarah talks about how for women in this industry, women working in sports, sexual harassment is just not something you hear about in isolated cases, but something that unfortunately feels like a rite of passage being a woman in this industry. You guys hear so many great voices, so many great women around this show, around ESPN. And you hear a lot of them offering up, yeah, this sounds familiar. And as Sarah points out, it's on everybody else. It's on the rest of us in the way that we cover instances like what we saw with Mickey Callaway, instances like what we see, unfortunately, time and time again in too many sports and too many different leagues, to be proactive in our own workplaces as well as in condemning what we see in these outside instances. So again, check this out from Sarah Spain on ESPN.com, ESPNW.com, co-host of Spain and Fitz, always doing great work, and at times grabbing us by the collar, reminding us what we need to do if we're going to be a part of solutions and not just paying lip service to these things. Chenan Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio, keeping that same energy. It's time to finish, though, with some celebrations. And we got to call out a birthday first because Bryant Burney, our Vizop, had a birthday yesterday. Wasn't around here. We didn't get a chance to celebrate. Wanted to shout it out. I don't know how old Bryant turned, and I'm not going to air him out like that if that's something he guards closely, but did want to appreciate and shout Bryant out, Bryant Burney, our Vizop, again, on a very happy birthday from yesterday. Our TV crew does such a great job holding it down on that side. Everything you watch on ESPN Plus, hardworking people doing a lot of it and putting it together, and Bryant's one of them, and so we greatly appreciate that. We also get a chance to celebrate our friends over at Dunkin' Donuts Park, home of the Yard Goats, because now for the third time, DDP is voted the best AA ballpark in America. And if you don't know, you better ask somebody, because you respect the yard when you enter the state lines in Connecticut. And I tell you, we don't have much here. I've been here since 1998. The Hartford Whalers left us. We have always been teased by the New England Patriots. The Goats bring us glory. But man, we got to get to this finally here, because I've been waiting. I've been trying to pay this off for you guys. And I actually deleted the story somehow, so now I've got to go back here and find it, because I was looking around here on these internets, guys, and found a story about a man swallowed by a whale. I kid you not, as I vamp right now for myself here and pull up the article now, in Provincetown, this is the Cape Cod Times. Direct quote, "I was completely inside as a lobster diver was swallowed whole by a whale." Michael Packard, veteran lobster diver, went out on his boat, the J&J, right off Herring Cove Beach, dove down for his second dive. It was about 35 feet from the bottom when he was literally swallowed by a humpback whale. He said, quote, "All of a sudden, I felt this huge shove, and next thing I knew, it was completely dark. I could sense I was moving. I could feel the whale squeezing the muscles inside of his mouth. Initially, he thought he was inside of a great white shark. He said it was completely black. I thought to myself, there's no way I'm getting out of here. I'm done. I dead. He struggled while the whale began shaking its head, and 30 to 40 seconds later, he was out there and he was free. He said, quote, "My first thought was, I can't believe I got out of that situation. My second thought was how injured I am." Turns out he had soft tissue damage and not much else after that. So go into the weekend, be safe by the water, and know that just because you end up in the whale's mouth doesn't mean you got to go down with the ship. I'm sure we're going to be hearing from this guy on Marty and McGee coming up on ESPN Radio this weekend. In the meantime, if you want to stick with us here on ESPN Radio, NBA coverage is going to be picking up right after us. Stay tuned. Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News, he reports on the New York Nets.
Thanks for listening to Chenan and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.